Your radio is tuned to Resonance 104.4 FM. My name's Jack Thurston, and this is The Bike Show. Well, for the next half hour, we're going to be taking to the streets with Buffalo Bill Chidley, chair of the London Bicycle Messengers Association and a London bike messenger for more than 20 years. It's going to be the first half of a special two-part interview. But first, let me introduce my two guests in the studio today. I've been joined by Jesse and Regan, both from the London chapter of the World Naked Bike Ride. Welcome to Resonance.
Hello, thank you.
Well, World Naked Bike Ride tells us quite a bit about what it is you're doing, but perhaps you could fill in some details. Regan.
Basically, it's a protest that started last year, and it's against oil dependency and people using their cars too much. It's also a great way to celebrate our bodies and get out there and do something really nice.
And so what is it exactly that you're going to be doing?
We'll be meeting at Wellington Arches at 3 o'clock on Saturday the 11th of June, and basically it's as bare as you dare, and we'll be riding our bikes around the streets of London, through the city. I think it's about 10-kilometre course, and everyone will be having a great time for sure.
So it's going to be starting at Hyde Park Corner.
Yep.
And then the route, is it a secret route or you haven't decided it yet?
No, the route's available on the website as well. You can have a look
where we're going. Yeah, the route was posted several weeks ago, I think, and the police have approved it now, so we're fully guaranteed no arrests, basically.
So you've got the backing of the police.
Yeah, they said fine with the nudity as well, which was really a surprise.
And tell me a little bit about how the ride went last year.
Well, the London ride, I participated in, but actually Regan participated in both UK rides.
I was actually quite lucky to be in Edinburgh and in London on the same day, so I popped along to the Edinburgh ride in the morning, and unfortunately the police there weren't so as understanding and they were quite strict. I went to take off my clothes and they came over to me and said, oh, you know, you're not allowed to do that. And I proceeded to take my shirt off and put a scarf on, and they said, look, there's been a... I think you only get in trouble if there's a complaint about you to the police. And they sort of said, well, someone's complained about you. And I said, that's outrageous. I look fabulous. How can anyone complain? But anyway, I had to tie my scarf around myself. And yeah, so that there was no nudity at the ride. But then
But the London ride was really nude.
The London ride was great.
Yeah, and the police didn't give us any hassle. They rode along with us. They didn't take off their kit, but...
Yeah, the police seem to be get quite into the critical mass rides these days. Yeah. In my recollection of having done them for 10 years or so, they're there on bicycles when they used to be there on motorbikes.
Wow.
So I don't know, maybe in a few years' time you'll have some naked policemen and women on the ride as well. But it's a worldwide phenomenon, isn't it? It's not just in London. Where did it all begin?
I think it sort of began in both Vancouver and Spain about 4 years ago. They were having rides. I think Spain was the first one. They were very small, like our ones in the UK last year. By last year, Spain actually had 400 riders, and that was the first time that they'd synchronized rides all around the world. And there were 250 riders in Chicago last year.
There was even people from New Zealand doing it at the same time as us, which I think was great solidarity because it's actually winter in New Zealand. We've got a calendar from the day, World Naked Bike Ride Day, and it's got New Zealand people and they're going, brrr, and it's like, yeah,
they'd be freezing. So cold.
I think, did they not have one in February this year?
Yeah, they've switched to, we're in the Northern Hemisphere Day, and there's a Southern Hemisphere Day in February.
That sounds wise.
Yeah, no, it was 29 countries, though, last year that participated.
And about how many people do you think in total? I mean, it was about 60 in London, wasn't it?
Yeah, 60 in London, about 60 in Edinburgh, probably 20 in LA. I'm not really sure. Could be around 1,000.
And San Francisco is a big one, especially because there's quite a lot of body painting going on as well.
Yeah, particularly in the Seattle ride, it looked like everybody was painted. It was great. Really good.
Hoping to get someone along this year, and hopefully we'll be able to have some paints on hand and have a few people sort of available there if people want to get painted up or can paint themselves.
And what happens if it rains?
I guess we'll get
wet. It's been so cold lately, hasn't it? I mean,
I know, this would be terrible weather for the ride, but...
Hey, yesterday was beautiful.
It was, actually.
We had yesterday. Absolutely gorgeous.
And so where do people go, and how do they find out more?
Well,
you got a website.
There's a website, which is www.worldnakedbikeride.org, and you just go to the UK pages, and you'll have information there. Also, just in terms of showing up on the day, you show up at 3 o'clock at the Wellington Arch, which is in the southeast corner of Hyde Park at Hyde Park Corner Tube.
At 3 o'clock on the 11th?
On the 11th of June.
Brilliant. Well, we do try to cover every conceivable aspect of cycling in London, including nude bike rides. But no survey of the bike scene would be complete without some special attention paid to London's bike messengers. These are the men and women who ride all year round, all day long, and are some of the best and most committed bicycle activists. So it was a really big pleasure for me to join up with Bill Chidley, who's chair of the London Bike Messengers Association, for a leisurely ride around town with him. And I started off the ride by asking him where it was we'd be going.
We're right here at the junction of Pentonville Road and Penton Street, which is as close as we can make it to where the first London bicycle messenger to be known to have been killed whilst working, which is a guy called Joe Cooper, was killed sort of in 1989. And then we're going to go and visit a few sort of London messenger sites, you know. Yeah, if you were doing a sort of blue badge tour of London messenger sites, this would, some of these places would be in it, so...
Here we are, and it's a big stencil.
I'll read out what it says. It said London bicycle messenger Joe Cooper, 1989, killed near this spot. And that's what it is.
And so when was this painted?
Well, we have a memorial ride that visits a spot on the 9th of October, which is International Messenger Appreciation Day. And we also came as part of the European Cycle Messenger Championships, which were held in London in 2003. So it would have been on one of those occasions, perhaps.
Well, it's lasted. It's good, tough paint.
Well, we originally started off painting it on the road, and then it would come off. And we painted it in yellow, and then we decided one time to do it in red on the pavement. And in some spots it's lasted, and in some spots it's been taken up. So I don't know whether you know, but... there's been a number of, not campaigns, but a number of requests to have a permanent roadside memorial to people that have been killed. So not just putting flowers up, but something that's permanent. And the Department of Transport has consistently refused to allow such memorials because they claim that they'll add to the danger.
Oh, well, by distracting people.
Yes,
Have you seen the memorial that we featured on the show a couple of months ago that Jeremy Deller put up for James Foster outside Mosquito Bikes?
Yes, I see it. I mean, my girlfriend works there on Sundays, and we're pretty tight with Mosquito. They have been a big supporter of London Messengers. So, and I think I he's one of those guys I think I knew, but loads of my friends knew James, and it was a big event for London Messengers as well as for just London cyclists generally.
Because that memorial is still there. I was past there. The little... bicycle icon on the lamppost, the sign for the unknown cyclist, is how.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, we'd like to see something to mark the spot where every messenger has been killed in, and I think we should have something to mark the spot where every cyclist has been killed, or even every pedestrian, because I think they have that in France now, permanent memorials to victims of road collisions. And that's part of their safety campaign, as opposed to the French government thinking that it contributes to danger on the roads. Bizarre. Anyway, let's...
All right, let's ride on.
Yeah, let's go to the next spot. The things that you want, I don't need. The things that you...
how did you get into being a bike messenger in the first place?
When I was a kid, I wanted to be a rock and roll musician. And after, I don't know, 4 or 5 years of trying that, I realised that I didn't really want to be a rock and roll musician. So I sold my guitars and bought a bike. And I had this bike. A friend of mine had just finished his summer job, which was working as a cycle courier, which is the same as a bicycle messenger. And he said, well, why don't you go and see these guys? So I did. And that was 20 years ago.
And it's been like that ever since?
I've been on and off the road, yeah. But I found that I really, really, really enjoyed riding a bike. And being paid to ride a bike has been, at times, like a dream job. So.
And how many couriers are there in London at the moment?
Well, it's hard to say for sure, but we estimate between 400 and 500 bicycle messengers at any one time earning their, you know, it's their main source of income.
And how many of those couriers are members of the LBMA?
We've got about 60 members, so that's about 15%. So, and we're working on expanding the membership. I mean, we're going to go sharp left here, yeah. It's a sort of transient job, and it doesn't require a lot of commitment. Say, if you take taxi drivers, they have to do 3 years. All that Blue Book stuff where they're doing the Blue Book interviews, the Blue Book runs. Whereas being a bicycle messenger, all you need is a bag, really, and a bike. And you can become a bicycle messenger.
I guess if you had to choose one profession to try and unionise, it's probably one of the hardest. I mean, because there's this great culture of individualism in a way, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, that's an illusion, really, because of the way that the job's organised. It makes more sense to work together than to work against each other. But there is this illusion of individualism.
Right.
But you could still be an individual and, you know, be part of a union or be part of an organisation representing workers. And our motto is rolling as one. But that doesn't mean that we want everybody to look alike or ride the same bike or, you know, do everything the same way. That just means that, you know, instead of just riding along separately, we could be riding along together, you know, which is why we're pretty keen on organising social events and, you know, so guys can roll as one, maybe down to Brighton. There's been rides down at Brighton, the Messenger Championships, obviously, and then the roller races as well, so.
So what makes a good courier?
Someone that shows up on time. Not necessarily someone that's a quick rider, although it's obviously it's helpful if you are a quick rider. I mean, if you're a controller, which is to say the guy that allocates you, you're looking for someone that's dependable and reliable and who you know where he's going to be or she. So I would say reliability is the most important thing.
And knowing the streets of London? Or do you think people pick that up pretty quickly?
Well, obviously some people are better at it than others. I mean, my girlfriend was a messenger for a long time. And she was actually a European messenger champion. She still cannot remember the names of the bridges. So it's not necessary to be a walking map, as long as you know where most of your clients are. And London's a really small place as well.
So, I mean, most of the jobs are around the city and West End, really.
The pedal bike riders do, yeah. In general, yeah, yeah. Like I said before, you know, London's a small place, really. I mean, there aren't that many places that people are going to want stuff biked to, really. Believe me, right, no one sends anything to Chingford by bike. It just doesn't happen. So.
We'll be right back. Bill is reminding us what I already know from having done many interviews on the road, that according to the highway code we are entitled to ride two abreast. Yeah. But this is more the letter of the law than the practice, it seems.
Well, I think what the problem is that a lot of motorists haven't read the highway code any time in the last 20 years, so they kind of make up their own highway code, which is difficult when you're trying to, when you don't know what their highway code is and you have to read their mind, because they're making all kinds of hand signals and you're thinking, what is he on about? Well, this is where the hole in the wall used to be. It used to be a sort of semicircle of benches right here where we are, which is
where we are on London Wall.
Moorfields here. Yeah. And this was like, if you were a city side rider and you had no work, you'd be standing by. You'd come down the hole, and there was kind of hole culture. There was a Benji's right there. And yeah, this was it. This was like the hot spot in the city, the hole.
And what's it now?
Well, it's been built on. This has been just been reopened, but in effect, the hole was taken away from us, man. They stole our hole. Well, it was never my hole, because I never hung out down here. I mean, who wants to hang out in the hole, man? But anyway, so let's ride on.
I mean, is there such a thing as a bike messenger culture? It seems like it from the outside that there...
Yeah, there is, really. I mean, I'm suspicious of talking about a subculture. I mean, there definitely is a sort of a group of people who are identifiably messengers, and that's what they do in their spare time as well as in the, do you know what I mean? They're like a full-time lifestyle sort of thing. We've got the pub that everyone goes to. We've got our own literature. We've got our own bands. We've got our own championships.
Tell us a little bit about the championship, because you were involved in setting that up, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, the World Championships, first one was held in Berlin in 93. I went along to that, and then it was decided to hold the second World Championships in London in 94, and I was involved in organising that as well. And since, so we're on the 15th, I can't remember, the 14th championship, which is in New York this year, which is going to be really exciting and really big championships.
And what are the events?
Well, it's more like sort of messenger Olympics, so there are sprints. There's the main event where you pick things up and deliver them, and whoever's done the most money wins. And there's all sorts of weird fixed wheel events, like
well, how long can you stand still at the red traffic light?
Track stand comp. There's a sort of variation on that where you get asked to take one hand off, take two hands off, take one foot off, you know. And then there's the longest skid contest as well, which is somewhat bizarre. I think the record is like something ridiculous, like a couple of hundred metres.
Well, one of the competitions that we've talked about on the bike show in the past is finding a speed camera that it's possible to set off on a bicycle.
Actually, I could be able to help you with that, because the Piccadilly Underpass, it's not actually a proper speed camera, but the Piccadilly Underpass has a light which comes on if you exceed 30 going under there, and I think I have actually set that camera off.
Are you supposed to go down there on a bike, or is it an urban clearway?
It's not an urban clearway. I mean, there's no signs up there saying
you can't go on the Strand underpass, can you?
Well, you're not supposed to, no. But there's no, Piccadilly's like legal for bikes, and I'm sure that I've set that off at least twice. But yeah, maybe that's a competition we should think about bringing into the Messenger Championship.
We're on the hallowed green tarmac of the very bumpy London bicycle lane. What do you think of bike lanes?
In general, they're just a waste of paint. I mean, this one is kind of okay, but generally, they're not direct, they're not safe. Yeah, so I just think they're a waste of paint.
We're down here by the Tower of London, and it's another stencil. This one to Mark Francis, 8th of June 1999.
Yeah, I mean, Mark's Mark was probably the best known messenger to have been killed up to that point. Like, everybody knew Mark, and it was a pretty unpleasant accident. Apparently he was still alive when he was taken in. I mean, he was still conscious, I should say, when he was in the ambulance. He was talking to the ambulance people and telling them what phone numbers to call, and then died like 10 days later from internal injuries. It's not really a pleasant thought. Mark was 23 and he had three kids. He was quite the boy, actually, Mark. He had three kids by three different mothers, and he was living with his fourth girl, so it was a real mess. And we were collecting money to give to his family, and then we found out about all these other kids, and it's all very confusing. Yeah, very, very confusing. You know, Mark was well liked. There were a lot of people at his funeral. I think it was the first messenger funeral I'd been to, and it was pretty moving. Like, we all rode behind the hearse, so that there was the hearse, a bunch of bike messengers, and then the rest of the funeral cortege. So it was pretty moving experience.
Did you hear what they said? Did you hear what they said? Did you hear what they said? They said another brother's dead. They said he's dead, but he can't.
Sebastian Lukomski Memorial. Seb was actually killed behind you over there on Upper Thames.
So we're on the corner of Upper Thames Street and the north end of Southwark Bridge.
Yeah. Seb was stationary behind the white line over there with an HGV on his right. And they both pulled away from the light. And Seb must have figured that he would get away from the light quicker than the HGV and carry straight on. But he didn't make it, and the HGV... Was turning left. Yeah, the HGV was turning left and ran him over, and he was dead on the spot. I mean, he was killed. He was stone dead on the spot.
Well, that sounds like absolutely the HGV driver in the wrong, turning left.
Yeah, I mean, the HGV driver was convicted of driving without due care and attention, given 6 points and £1,000 fine. So in the eyes of the law, yeah, that the HGV driver was to blame, bore a large part of the responsibility for Seb's death.
But it's. I mean, why is it not possible to prosecute people for manslaughter in these cases?
That's a question you have to direct to the CPS and the police. I mean, I can't answer that.
But you must have asked that question an awful lot.
Yeah, I mean, basically, the way the law stands, I'm told that it's not possible to prosecute people for manslaughter if it's if you're in a motor vehicle, then. You know, you can kill people and all you get is some sort of administrative penalty. That's what I'm told. So murder isn't murder, or manslaughter isn't manslaughter if you're behind the wheel. If you want to kill someone, get into a car, because you'll get away with it.
This is the third of the memorials that we visited, and it's something of a double-edged sword, isn't it, commemorating the death of someone who's a cyclist, because in a way there's a lot of safety in numbers. The more people get on the roads, the safer it is for everybody. Absolutely. But and then it's right to commemorate deaths for all the emotional reasons. But it's also right because it, you know, highlights things that can go wrong. But then again, you don't want to discourage people from getting on their bikes.
How do you
manage that balance?
It's a difficult balance to strike. I mean, as the chair of the LBMA, it's not my responsibility to promote cycling. Although. My members and London Messengers would be safer if there were more cyclists, definitely.
Well, that was Bill Chidley from the London Bike Messengers Association riding with me last week. You can catch the second half of that ride on the show the next week at the same time, Monday, from 1:30 till 2 p.m, the bike show on Resonance FM. Well, Regan and Jesse are here with me still from the World Naked Bike Ride. I think this is going to make some great radio, World Naked Bike Ride, don't you think? I think radio will be able to get things that you can't get on the can't get on TV.
And you'll be able to like go full frontal, interview people, no problem.
Yeah,
no,
that's true.
So it's going to be great because you'll not have to do any censoring.
Are you going to come along?
Yeah, I think so.
That's so great.
I think so. I'll come along with as long as I can strap my mini disc recorder and microphone over my shoulder.
It's bare as you dare.
No one's going to mind about that.
Yeah.
And you got any advice, in terms of, protecting those sensitive areas that don't normally come into contact with the saddle? I mean, chafing is a kind of issue that I'm a little bit concerned about.
It's interesting. A lot of people worry about this. And in fact, it's a sort of not an issue. Once you've tried it, you find that actually maybe the clothing contributes to the chafing that you would experience. And so you've sort of... the people who ride naked don't actually seem to have any reports.
I don't think there was any injuries sustained last year.
Yeah.
I'd probably just recommend sunscreen, really. If it's going to be a nice hot day, just sunscreen and water and a bag to carry your clothes in.
Great. Well, thanks very much for coming into the studio today and see you in a month's time.
Excellent. Great. Can't wait.
And this is the end of the bike show and this last track goes out to the World Naked Bike Ride.
Yeah.
Resonance 104.4 FM. Get up, cool.